Thank you very much. I guess I could go through my sort of history. I'm from New York, born and raised in Manhattan, two blocks from Polderhouse. And that's how I fell in love with baseball. I was a juvenile delinquent, and some of you guys remember they had a Second World War, and my father was in the South Pacific. My mother worked at the Brooklyn Navy Yard, so I was on my own a lot. And being on my own, I used to sneak down to the Polo Grounds and watch the Giants. And back in those days, the Giants didn't have any black players. And I always thought, well, maybe black players weren't good enough. You know, I found out later a lot different. But that was my thought during the time. And before I'd moved up to Connecticut in 1951, the Giants got Monty Irvin, who played for the Giants, played left field for the Giants. Very good ball player. Well, my hero back then was Bobby Thompson. You guys heard of Bobby Thompson, right? Yeah. Yeah.
I'm a Dodger fan.
Oh, you know, you heard of Bobby Thompson. I was at a thing with Ralph Branca up in Boston celebrating Jackie Robinson's birthday a couple of years ago. And I had a chance to talk with him. I never played ball with him. Of course, I'm only 80 years old, 82, as a matter of fact. So a lot of the guys, you know, you hear about, I didn't play with Mel Ott and Babe Ruth and all the rest of those people I didn't play with or against. Anyway, in 1951, I moved to Stamford, Connecticut, which I hated, because once you live in New York, there's nowhere else, you know. But that's where my mother went. And I swore every weekend I was going to follow the train tracks back to New York and play baseball. I played a lot of baseball. And are you from New York? Oh, you're from Brooklyn?
I'm from
Connecticut.
Connecticut,
okay. Well,
MGM Radio.
Excuse me?
MGM Radio, Voice of the Dodgers.
Uh-huh. I moved to Stamford, Connecticut, which I hated. You know, a little hick town like Stamford. Of course, all these towns were hick towns back then when you come from New York. But in New York, I played a lot of baseball in Central Park, Van Cortlandt Park, Prospect Park, Katona Park. Played all over New York. And most of my baseball, of course, America has always been segregated. And most of my baseball I played with black players. One of the dreams of playing at Central Park is that was like a mecca for ball players. After the seasons were over, the Negro League and also the Major League, a lot of the ball players would come to Central Park and play ball in Central Park. I mean, I played ball with some of the Giants and some of the Negro League ball players. So anyway, I loved playing baseball. I loved all aspects of baseball. I love baseball, all aspects of it. I learned to play all the positions in New York. I had a teacher, Mr. Reese, who helped me out a lot. Paul Atko, who taught me how to wind up and throw the ball. But anyway, like I said, I played a lot of baseball. Going to the Polo Grounds, going up in left field, catching batting practice balls off of, I used to try to sneak into the games. I used to sneak in right field. The Polo Grounds at that time, The modern-day ballparks, you can't sneak in. But back then, you could climb up over the left field wall, and I'd go upstairs in the upper deck and be there for batting practice. And I'd catch balls, and that's how I had baseballs to play with. Because a baseball cost $3 back then. You know, who in the world could get $3 to buy a new baseball? So I'd catch baseballs, and one day I caught 7 of them. Because there were some were batting practice baseballs, some were game baseballs. The team that used to hit the most balls up there were the Boston Braves, Joe Adcock and those guys. Anyway, I moved to Stanford, and I pitched for Stanford High School. In the spring, they were having the meetings for the Stanford High School team. And I'm going to jump the gun. I go to the varsity meeting, and they put me out. They say, well, you're a sophomore. You can't play varsity baseball. You have to go play with the junior varsity. So I went over and played with the junior varsity. After a couple of games, the word got out how good I played, and Coach Kutso called me over. He says, I want you to pitch a couple games here for the varsity team. And he told Bill Purcell, big Bill Purcell, he was a great pitcher. He says, you go warm up. I'm going to let Gil Black go in and pitch a couple of innings. In case he has any trouble, you're already warmed up, ready to go in, back him up. I struck out the first 3 batters on 9 pitches. I struck out the second 3 batters on 9 pitches, so Purcell could go sit down now. So anyway, I went through high school with a 15-1 record. And it would be kind of funny because I live in Danbury now. And the last game of the season, we're playing in this really hick town, this cow town called Danbury. And guy hit a home run off me in the last inning. And what I think happened, he hit the ball out to center field, but it was, if I remember right, it was 2 outs in the last inning. And the center fielder's running in like the game is over, and the guy hit the ball over the center fielder's head, and he got a home run. So I had a 15-1 record in high school. After high school, Mo Magliola called me up one day, and he was the sports writer for the Stanford Advocate. And he said, Gil, I had met him quite a few times during the season because he'd come to the game and write up the games. He says, would you like to go to a Braves tryout? I said, sure. Oh, before that, I played for the Stanford Eagles, which was a black team in Stanford. Because outside of high school, everything was segregated. And I played with the Eagles. And we played a team out of New Haven called the Indians. The Indians drove a big, beautiful bus down to the ballpark, and they bet a lot of money on the game. I beat them 1-0. So they went back to New Haven broke. And I know that because I met some of the players after, in later years, and they told me the story. They had to go back and collect money to pay the bus driver, because they figured they'd win the game wherever they played. But anyway, two guys came down from New Haven and told me they were playing the Hartford Chiefs. Anybody ever hear the Hartford Chiefs? And they had a big money game with the Hartford Chiefs. And they wanted me to pitch. And this, I was a sophomore in high school, come to think of it. And I said, well, I'll go ask my mother. Because Hartford, during those days, was a pretty good ways away, you know. So my mother said, no, you can't go. You're in high school. You can't play professional ball. And I begged and I begged and I begged. So anyway, one of the guys said to us, I'll tell you what, we'll change his name so nobody will know who he is. So they changed my name to Kenny Hart. And I came up to Hartford, and I beat the Hartford Chiefs. And the Hartford Chiefs is one of the Braves' number one farm clubs. And the manager was surprised, everybody was surprised, but the New Haven team won a lot of money. They got some of their money back from losing in Stanford. So they had another game for me to play against the Boston Hobos. I played against them, beat them. All these games I pitched 9 innings. There was no middle reliever and relief pitchers and all of that kind of crazy stuff. So Mo Magliola calls me up. I'm now graduated from high school. I got a 15-1 record. And he asked me would I like to go to a Braves tryout. And that was in Meriden, Connecticut. So I knew a guy that had a car. So he says, well, you find a guy that has a car, I'll give you the car fare, I'll give you the money to buy gas, and if you can, you can go up there and try out for the team. So I got my little satchel with my bat and my glove and my uniform in it, and I go up to Meriden, Connecticut. I walk back by the dressing rooms where all the managers are, and out comes the manager of the Hartford Chiefs. He says, who are you? Where are you? I've been looking for you for a year now. And like I say, he recognized me. And I pitched a couple of innings at Meriden against other guys that were trying out for the Braves. And I did good. I pitched a couple of innings. I didn't give up any hits, no runs. And the next night, Jeff Jones, who was head scout for the Boston Braves, was at my house. And he signed me to a contract with the Braves. I had a contract to play for Quebec, which is not, it's not prejudiced up in Canada. So anyway, the winter goes along. I go down to spring training with the Braves. And I'm surprised. All the black players have to sleep on the porches of the buildings, and the white players sleep inside. The only thing we did together was play baseball and eat. We mixed it up then. I met some good friends there. I met Claude Raymond, who played for the Montreal Expos. Another guy named Don Larrivee out of Waterbury. He was a great pitcher, he pitched in the Yankees system and the Braves. But anyway, I run into segregation there. So I pitched, I'm down to spring training for like maybe 2 weeks. I'm not doing nothing but running and trying to get in shape. And they finally give me an assignment to pitch. I pitched 2 innings. I gave up no hits, no runs, no errors. And if you know baseball, you know pitchers don't hit. And there was no slot for me to hit in. But the number 8th batter got up, and there was nobody in the on-deck circle. So I grabbed a bat and got in the on-deck circle. After the 8th batter got up and did whatever he did, which I don't remember, I got up and I hit a long double out in left field. And that was the extent of my spring training. Next thing I know, they got me a ride with this guy named Ed Stanicky. He played for the Yankees, and he was the manager of West Palm Beach. And they got me. They put me in the car with him, and he drove me down to West Palm Beach. Well, the first stop was they had to find a place for me to sleep because it's a long ride. And I slept in a rooming house, and it was the nighttime, the drive from spring training to. And I woke up in the morning, looked out the window, I couldn't believe it. I'd never seen a palm tree before. And I was in St. Augustine, Florida. That was halfway of the trip to West Palm Beach. And then I get to West Palm Beach. Then he has to find a place for me to stay, somewhere for me to eat. And there's one more guy who came a day or two later named, Anyway, he was the other black player, and we shared a room. We're getting ready for the season to start, play a few games here and there, and I pitch in one game. I don't remember just exactly how it turned out, but anyway, next thing I know, I'm released. And the reason why I'm released is that it's too much trouble for the manager, Ed Stanicky, to go find places for us black players to eat, because the other black player was released too. Him and I were released at the same time. They had to find places for us to eat and for us to sleep. And that was the job of the manager of the team. So maybe it was too much work for him to do. But anyway, here I am now, released from the Braves. So I get back to New York, and I run into this other guy, a bird dog. Do you know what a bird dog is? He's like a little below a scout. And he says, well, Pittsburgh's having a spring training. Why don't you go down with them? So I said, sure, because I love baseball. So, and it snowed in New York. I stayed with my father overnight, and I get up in the morning, my car is covered with snow. I got a 48 Buick convertible. And as I'm wiping the snow off, I tear a little hole in the canvas, and get the snow off, get in the car, go across the George Washington Bridge, going down the Jersey Turnpike, the top blows off. That little crack I made with taking the snow off caused the air to get underneath it. The top blows off. So by the time I get down there, I got a mild case of pneumonia, so I can't perform. But the people, again, I'm in a black hotel, if I can remember the name of it, so long ago. But people are so nice. The guy who was running the hotel, it was no classy joint. He was taking care of me, going to get me cups of soup and medicine to make me better. So I get back a day before they're going to break camp. And one of the scouts tell me, go out and pitch, let's see what you got. So I get on the mound, the first pitch, I zoom a fastball in. All the scouts' eyes look up, they're all excited. And he runs over and says, let's see the curve. I said, I've been here one day. You don't throw curveballs, you know, just like that. So anyway, I'm released again. But I met a guy named James Cobbin, who was also released from there. And he says, well, I'm going over to where the Clowns are. The Indianapolis Clowns are having a tryout, having a spring training. So he says, I'm going over there. You want to go over there? I said, sure. But I left out a good part of that story. Before I went down to spring training with the Pirates, the summer before, I see a play card where the Indianapolis Clowns are playing this team close to where I live. And on the bottom of the play card is the phone number. And I called the number up. I said, I'd like to try out for the team. He says, well, you meet him over there, I'll let him know you're coming. That was Sid Pollock, the owner of the Indianapolis Clowns. So I make the team over there. I tell them who I am. They say, all right, you're pitching. So I pitched, and I beat the team. And so they knew who I was. So after I left Pittsburgh spring training with James Cobbin, I get to the club, got a room for me, and they give me meal money. And from there on in, that's my thing with the Indianapolis Clowns. And I love playing for the Clowns because I played every day. I play shortstop, I play third base, I play outfield. I do a lot of, play all positions, plus I was a good hitter. And things were going great. And June 11th, I had won like 13 games. And we're playing in Fayetteville, North Carolina. And Choo Choo Coleman is catching. Anybody ever hear of Choo Choo Coleman? my sister. Choo Choo Coleman used to catch for the Mets. Yeah, he cut for the Philadelphia Phillies and the Mets. But he was my catcher during that time. Anyway, one of the batters hit a pop-up. I'm playing third, and I go to catch the ball. As I catch the ball and come down, and I'm in the coach's box. And you know where the coach's box is, right? Along the third base line. Here comes Choo-Choo, bam, breaks my wrist. So that's slowed down my baseball career. I went home and had to stay home for a while till they healed, and I met the team in Albany. I called Sid Pollock and told him I was ready to play ball again. Met the team in Albany, and I finished the league playing with the Clowns. I have something I want. We got a picture here of me and Dale Strawberry. He's a pretty great guy. I don't know how much you guys know about him, but he pass that around. That's different questions you can ask him if he hadn't thought of it. Oh, and you can interrupt me anytime. Just ask me any questions you want. Okay? You're not running out of time, are we?
Yeah.
Okay.
I have a question for you while you're. You got some great nicknames. Do you have any anecdotes, or how do these nicknames come about? Like Nature Boy, Nature Boy, and you mentioned Choo Choo.
Well.
Choo-choo
ran like a train. That's how he got his nickname, and it stayed with him. How Choo-choo became a Philly and a Met, we went to Orlando, the Clowns. I was playing with the Clowns. And Choo-choo had just gotten released from the Washington Senators. And he wanted to try out for the team. So we gave him a uniform, and let him try out for the team. Right then, I forgot where we were going after that, because we played one day here. We might ride 200, 300, 50 miles, who knows, to the next town to play in. But Choo Choo was all ready to go. He got on the bus, and he was all ready to go. But he had been released from the Washington Senators. And that, some of the things that you're passing on, one of them is fake tryouts, which I'll explain in a minute. Maybe you'll understand that. So, you interrupted me. Now, where was I at?
I think you broke your wrist.
Yeah, I broke my wrist, and I went back to the team. Oh, Well, I'll get back to the other, some other stories. This guy named Wilmer Fields, I don't know whether you guys are baseball historian or not, historians or not, but we had a game in Virginia, some town in Virginia, South Boston or something like that. And I was pitching that night. So, like again, if you know anything about baseball, the pitcher usually stays in the dressing room and relaxes until it's time for him to go out and warm up and so on and so forth. He's the last one to take batting practice. While I was in there taking my time, this big guy comes in. He has a uniform under his arm, puts on a uniform, gets dressed, goes out. Then it's my turn. I go out to take my batting practice. When I get out there's no more balls left. The guy that went out before me was named Wilmer Fields. He hit them all over the fence. And he was a great ball player. He played for Toronto and quite a few other places. I also had the opportunity to pitch against him. We sold him to Fort Wayne, Indiana. And somehow I seem to have gotten him out two times before. But this last time he was up, I had two strikes on him. And I'm looking down at Choo-Choo, and Choo-Choo was giving me signs of what to throw. And I keep shaking him off because this guy's a real good hitter. And I decided I'm going to throw a screwball low and outside, make it break back into the plate, and maybe I'll catch him napping. He hit that ball so hard, he almost killed the second baseman, Reginald Howard. And when I went down to one of the baseball conventions, I called a hotel up from the airport, and they came and picked me up in a van. As I'm stepping off the van, there's Reginald Howard standing there. The first thing he asked me, "Do you remember that ball that Wilmer Fields hit?" And I said, "Yeah, I remember it. I remember the pitch. I remember everything about it." Some things you don't forget. But he hit that ball so hard, it just went all the way to the center field fence, over the second baseman's head to the right center field fence, rattling around the fence. Another time we're playing in Virginia. No, Biloxi, Mississippi. That's on that paper that passed around. And I'm playing center field. Now, a regular center fielder was Virtus Drake. He was a Cuban. And why I'm playing center field, I don't know, because he's another great ball player. He played with the Clowns many years. Played in that, when the season was over, he'd go back to Cuba. But anyway, I'm playing center field. And the game is going on, and the sheriff's car comes pulling right up out on the field, Biloxi, Mississippi. Well, back in those days, lights at some of these ballparks weren't that bright. And I'm a little fair-skinned. And the sheriff gets out the car, walks past the pitcher, walks past the shortstop, and he's coming out to center field. I didn't steal nothing or nothing. What in the world's going on here? I got my hat pulled down. He walks out and he comes, looks at me up and down. He shakes his head, walks back, and gets in the car. And somebody had called the sheriff's department up and said, "There's a white boy out there playing with black boys. And that's against the law." So they thought I was white playing with these black guys. So that's another one of my stories. Another thing, fake tryouts. You know, you like to think things are equal. That's your dream. You love baseball. You like to think things are equal. And if I'm good enough, I'll make it. We used to buy, us kids used to buy the Sporting News. And in the sporting news, the different teams, the major league teams, they would usually have a tryout somewhere, maybe in New Jersey, maybe in Connecticut, maybe in New York. Somewhere they have tryouts. And you go to these tryouts. And you'd excel everybody else, but nobody would pay you any attention. This happened to me even with the Dodgers, when the Dodgers had Joe Black and Don Newcomb and Jackie Robinson, so on and so forth. And they were looking for white ball players. They weren't looking for black ball players. You know, there's enough of them in the Negro League. So, this goes before I played professional baseball. This is before. We buy our sporting news and check out the Kansas City Athletics are having tryouts at McCombs Park and this and that and so on and so forth. And I used to go, I hit balls 400 feet, I pitch and strike out everybody and so on and so forth. And they weren't interested. And to prove it, Jackie Robinson in 1945 tried out for the Boston Red Sox. Jackie Robinson, Maurice Williams, and Sam Jethro tried out for the Boston Red Sox. And as they were getting through, one of the executives of the Boston Red Sox hollered out down on the field, "Get them niggas off the field." Now, you know what happened with Jackie Robinson. He signed with the Dodgers. Everybody knows how good he was. Sam Jethro, anybody ever hear of him? Yeah. Sam Jethro was Rookie of the Year in the National League in 1951, but he wasn't even good enough for a minor league contract with the Red Sox. Willie Mays tried out for the Red Sox in 1950. And again, they didn't want him. Willie Mays turned out to be probably the best baseball player that ever played the game. So you don't know always that it's an uphill battle or why it is even a uphill battle, but there was an uphill battle to play baseball, Major League Baseball. But I love playing for the Clowns. I played every day. If we played a doubleheader, I might pitch one end of the doubleheader, play shortstop the next, third base the next. The names you said, Nature Boy Williams, right? Nature Boy didn't wear shoes. And he, some of these books I have here, if anybody wants to look at them, you can, the 1, 2, and 3 book, there's pictures of Nature Boy. We had Prince Joe Henry, third baseman. But see, the clowns was an attraction. We had baseball players, and we had people who clowned, like King Tut, Prince Joe Henry, Bebop, Nature Boy. They all could play. They all were great ball players, but they could do other things too. I could never do what King Tut could do. You know, with a baseball, you do more with a baseball than a monkey with a peanut. You know? 2 or 3 days rest. Or when the games were tough. Ed Hammond, who managed the Clowns, was a real great guy. I get real choked up when I think about him. He was a real great guy. He was white, he was a Jewish guy. No prejudice whatsoever with him at all. All he wanted you to do, we had 2 rules on the Clowns. Hustle on the field and don't miss the bus. Because if you missed the bus, you might be 500 miles away. Yes? Okay, that's good. I'm glad you asked that. Abe Saperstein started the Harlem Globetrotters, along with Sid Pollock. they broke off. Abe Saperstein kept the Globetrotters. Sid Pollard kept the Indianapolis Clowns. And a lot of people don't know that. But yeah, it was the same thing. Of course, with basketball, you could play in a room this size. Baseball is a much bigger thing. But yeah, the Clowns, we were the basketball, we all used that song too, Sweet Georgia Brown. Yeah, they played that song too when we played. I was watching a Yankee game on TV one day, and they were talking about the Negro League. And one of the guys was trying to figure out what this thing we did at the seventh inning, what we called it. And it really got the fans all excited. And we called it shadow ball. No, none of the Yankee announcers, they're all ex-ball players too, could remember it. But they called it shadow ball. And I used to perform with the shadow ball with King Tut and Bebop and Prince Joe Henry and Nature Boy. And that would really get the fans going. Do you have any idea what shadow ball is? It's having infield practice, you know what that is, without a ball. I mean, they'd be catching balls like this. And King Tut usually would be the catcher. So the first base, after the ball would go around the horn, he'd throw it to King Tut. And King Tut would be there maybe drinking a cup of water and this and that. And they'd be hollering, Tut, 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 Tut. He'd bam, he'd catch the ball. It was fun for even the ball players to do every day, you know? And we sometimes played 8 games a week. I remember on the 4th of July, we played 4 games. And we didn't make, I made $225 a month. And that paper I passed around, you saw where it said 100% broke, right? At the end of the season, we played at Griffith Stadium in Washington. And the ball players would split up the gate. And that sounds like a great big deal, you know. We had a nice, pretty good amount of people at the ball games, you know. It was a doubleheader. I played third. And it was when the feel in Washington was a little different than some of the other fields, where the infield was like on a stage. It went like this here. And I got a ball hit to me at third base, which I caught, throwing the guy out. I threw it right over the first baseman's head into the stands. You know, I didn't make many errors, but I made that one. So anyway, where am I at here now? I did the fake tryouts. Any questions anybody have? Yes. You're from New York? You are? Giants. Oh, yeah. Yeah. But you're young. You remember Bobby Thompson and Don? Yeah. Right. Well, you know, being you've been to the Polo Grounds, and it's a place that if you go every day, you get a chance to get close to the field. So yeah, you get to know. I didn't go to dinner with them. I knew them all. I knew Monty Irvin, Leo DeRocher, you know, because I'm as far away from them as you. You could talk to them. You know, the Polo Grounds was that way. Yes. Well, I had a guy, I don't remember his name just now. He gave me a painting that he did of Willie Mays. And with Willie Mays running this way, do you remember who hit that ball? Yeah. Vic Works. Vic Works. Yeah, you remember, but you just didn't. Okay, well, Willie Mays catching the ball over his head like this here, right? And there's a couple things in the picture that's changed in baseball. He didn't have his name on his back. Because baseball fans, you didn't need to have your name on your back. They knew who you were. When Stan Musial came, he didn't have to have Musial on his back. You knew who Stan Musial was. You knew who Joe DiMaggio was. You knew who all these people were. If you were a baseball fan, you know, today is so commercialized. I went to a game in Atlanta. My daughter brought me to the game. And to being in the Polo Grounds or in other stadiums where you can look at the pitcher holding the ball and you can tell what seams he's holding the ball on, so on and so forth. You're like this watching the ball game. You're so far away, I couldn't really enjoy it. Yes, ma'am. I can't. No. You mean as far as the Negro League?
Yeah.
It gets, every year it gets less and less. Every year it gets less and less. My girlfriend's nephew, grandson, when I met her, she bought some books from me about the Negro League. And he lives in East Lyme, Connecticut. And he wrote a thing on the Negro League. And the teachers were very surprised, and so on and so forth. And he won credit for that. But no, a lot of the people that have no idea. This jacket here and my hat has a lot of the different teams that played in the Negro League. Yes, ma'am?
A lot of the movies
I was supposed to play in Bingo Long. I missed a few things. There was a guy called in the movie. Of course, you wouldn't have any reason to remember. There was a guy called Birmingham Sam. And in 1971, I was playing for Torrington because I played baseball till I was 40-some years old. I was playing for Torrington, and the Clowns came through Torrington, and this great guy, Ed Hammond, the manager of the Clowns, saw me, and he went up on the microphone, and you thought I was Joe DiMaggio, the way he built me up and talked about the years that I played. I played in 1956, so this is 1971. The Clowns came through, and he gave me this big build-up. Anyway, I met Birmingham Sam, and he wrote me a letter, and he wanted me to play in the movie, which I didn't do. I was also supposed to play in the movie The Raging Bull as Joe Louis. I might not look a lot like him, but I was given that offer, and again, I didn't do that. Yes?
Did you have any favorite teams that you really enjoyed playing against from the Clowns as to another team? And what, and second to that, were there any like real rivalries that you had between the teams?
Well, nobody was mad at anybody, you know. Baseball is a game. You have, it's like a individuals sort of game. It's not like football or something, you know. You do your thing. You get up at bat, you hit. The spotlight's on you. The ball's hit to you, you do what you're going to do with it, you know. Everybody's a little separate from everybody. It's a team sport, but everybody's a little separate from everybody else. Do you want to know some of the differences in baseball from when I first got interested in it till now? Okay. I have here, in the early days, baseball wasn't for the faint of heart. You know what that means, right? A lot of people can't play baseball because they're afraid of the baseball. Baseballs are hard. They don't call it softball. You watch Chris Matthews on TV, hardball. Baseballs are hard. So let's see. Well, it wasn't called hardball for nothing. When I grew up, there was no Little League, no Babe Ruth League, no American Legion, no Carl Ripken, no T-ball. Oh, and no helmets. Now you play baseball, right? And you would never think about getting up at bat without a helmet, right? Because you know baseball is hard. We didn't have helmets. The first time I put on a helmet was when I went with the Pirates in 1956. Then it became mandatory that you wear a helmet. But no helmets, no body armor. You see, remember Bobby Bonds? He got body armor all the way up and down his body. It doesn't matter whether the pitcher throws at him or not.
No batting gloves.
No batting gloves. No umpire interference. Today, you pitch, you throw close to the batter, the umpire is going to throw you out the game. And I have here no batting gloves, like you say. And I keep wondering, how come they can't get any of their fit? After each pitch, they're getting out, tightening the gloves up. You know, how come they don't have any of their fit? And no highlight gloves. You see the gloves that the ball players play with today. No super hyped up baseballs. I look at the game sometime now, I watch, I see the guy throw the ball down and bounces back up. Baseball didn't bounce when I was playing ball. And no nice guy baseball. You went out there to win. It didn't matter, nothing else mattered. You went out there to win. No clowning around. All the sports you see today, everybody's a clown, right? Huh? I mean, the guy catches a touchdown pass, you think he won $10 million, or maybe he did. You know, the same thing with basketball. They jump up and dunk the ball, and all of a sudden they're tucking their chest out and this and that. We had no batter-friendly mounds. The mound was high, the pitcher threw down at you. Now the mound is like this here, and this guy still don't bat but 225. Oh, no one-hand catches. You play ball, right? If you went out there and you caught a ball with one hand that you could have caught with two, the coach might sit you down on the bench. All catches were made with two hands. Okay, no pajama pants. And I'm affiliated with the Danbury Westerners. Are you familiar with them at all? It's a college team. And I told him about the pajama pants. He said, "You don't like those?" I said, "Who wants to run with a parachute on their back? How can you run with a parachute holding your back?" But these guys do it. I mean, the guy from Boston with the big poppy, he's not going to steal no bases anyway. If he don't hit it out the park, he ain't going to run around all around the bases. So he can do it. And like I was saying here, real fans who love baseball, they don't need to see the guy's name on the back. They don't need the announcer in the seventh inning telling you who's coming up the bat because you was there when the game started. You know who's coming up the bat. And swinging at balls that bounce. I watched TV today, I can't believe it. The balls are bouncing and the guys are swinging. One of the biggest things that in baseball when I was young was that Satchel Paige had DiMaggio swinging a ball that bounced. And everybody was talking about that. Today, all these guys swinging, the balls don't even get the home plate, they're swinging at it before it gets there. Any more questions? Yes, ma'am. Excuse me? Did I get hit that much? No, no. You learn to fall real fast. Yeah, you know, going back on your heels, you're not going to hit the ball too far. So like I said, baseball wasn't for the faint of heart. You have to dig in, but you got to be ready to fall out of the way of the ball too. Because you got somebody like Don Drysdale or Don Newcomb or one of those really Juan Marichal or something like that pitching at you. You can't be too much on your toes, and you got to be ready to fall out of the way. Hit? No. That Herb Score did that. You probably remember that. He lost his career. He got hit in the head with the baseball. Also, George Kell, third baseman for the Detroit Tigers. Joe DiMaggio broke his jaw hitting the ball. He hit it so hard. Any other questions? Yes.
Before you go, could you take your hat off so you can see what you look like?